So I believe we wanted to start Perek Vav. I'm not wrong. We finished Perek Hey last week. We went through a summary of the seven differences between a Baal B'tochen and someone who's not a Baal B'tochen. We discovered that we live somewhere between those two polarities. We're not the Baal B'tochen. We're also not the Baal B'tochen. We have features of both. The person has to do some work there, a lot of work, to see exactly where in these different areas he fits in. The way to do that is to go through, as you go through different situations, ask yourself, how am I as a Baal B'tochen supposed to deal with this situation? We have any shyness, person has issues, person has struggles, battles, challenges. That have to be earth-shattering. It's better to start with the little things and ask yourself, Tov, if I was a Baal B'tochen, how would I deal with this? How would I relate to this? How would I work on it? Play around with it. We're going to start Perek Vav. Very interesting that the he dedicates an entire chapter to this. Very interesting that he does that. We'll see. It's a continuation of the previous chapter. When one works very hard and spends a lot of time trying to make a lot of money to have savings, and when you ask him, when are you going to actually start getting ready for the next world, then he tells you that when I've got enough saved up to support me and my wife and my children as long as I live in this world, then I'll start getting ready to take care of my Olam Haba. First of all, Olam Hazeh has to be in place. I'm going to live to be 100 years old. I've worked out exactly how much I need, inflation and this and that. So therefore, when I've got this and this money put away, then I'll start getting my act together. So it's interesting. He points out, yeah, I didn't know this, but he points out that in the original, in the Arabic text, that the Chofetz Chaim was written originally in Arabic. This is just a continuation of Perek Hay. In other words, Perek Vav is a hemshech of Perek Hay. But it has this next paragraph that he has here is actually the end of Perek Hay, not Perek Vav, but the way it's set up now in the translation, since they translated into Hebrew and whatever, is the beginning of Perek Vav. So let's see what we're talking about here. Very interesting sugya this. And we'll see ourselves a little bit here as well, if you're honest with yourself. Not totally, because he takes in extremes, but in klalim, but you'll see this pratim here that are shaykh to all of us. V'elisi la'aris p'nei sichloisom v'tu'usom v'das hazois. I see fit to describe the aspects and of this foolishness and the mistake people make with this attitude, the attitude of that when I have enough to live on in this world, then I'll start worrying about Olam Haba. And he divides it up into seven categories. B'shiva inyonim egleh behem goydel tusam. In seven areas, I will show them the great error of their ways. V'mirarichu b'davreinu. And even though you'll see that there's going to be a long discussion, ze shaveh. Because one needs a detailed discussion of the problem, and it will bring some embarrassment and serve as a tochoche, as a criticism to people who have this attitude, so they might get their acts together. When you point out to somebody the foolishness of his ways, and that brings him to being embarrassed, whatever, it can bring a person to doing tshuva and to change their attitude. So therefore, that's what he's coming to do. He unapologetically, he's coming to give people who think like this, coming to give it to them on the head. He's talking, these people are what we call people who want a mashkin from Hashem. When you lend money to somebody, you worry they might not pay you back. So you take a surety, what we call a mashkin, a mashkanta. What's a mashkanta? Give the bank your house, and then they lend you the money. If you don't pay them back, they take your house. So that's what he calls these people. These people who won't have enough to live on for the rest of their lives, before they'll start taking care of their chayvus in the real world, he calls those bale mashkanos, people who want a mashkan. They want a security for the deposit. In yonim b'zeh kenyan asoiche shehu meicha ba'ashray lemisha enu ma'amino. It's like somebody who sells goods to a person on credit. He doesn't trust him. V'yam shichneinu ba'eis ha'mecha mipnei rosom imosom mimimut imenosom. He takes security, like I said, at the time of the mechira, because he's afraid the guy won't be able to pay back, won't be reliable. V'shalot timtze yodah leporo, and he won't find what to pay back with. So what's the comparison? These people don't trust Hashem that he'll be willing to support their needs and take care of them. So therefore, they won't take care of their obligations that they have to HaKadosh Baruch Hu until Hashem gives them a security. Hashem gives them a mashkin for the money that they need for all their desires. That's what I want. When my physical needs are taken care of, then Hashem, then I'm free up to do whatever you want. That means when you give me, when I'm secure, when I'm sure that I know that I have what I need, then I don't mind dedicating my life to doing what you want me to do. But if I don't have everything I need, well, then I'm going to have to do something about it. I can't dedicate my time to you. So they want a mashkin from Hashem. Okay, so I want to take some time out here just because at this point he brings down a very interesting overview here. From all your Cheskel, from other places, why this is such an important concept. It sounds like a side issue. This would have been in this whole chapter here for this, seven different inyonim. You can see there's something very important going on here. We've spent five whole chapters discussing all the inyonim of Betochen and how it works and Ishtadlis and all the inner works of Betochen. And suddenly starts talking about something here, which seems to be a side issue. So you have a few people that's who they are. So they're the people that don't have betochen, and therefore this is how they behave. You know, he's making a ganz asik out of it. So he says like this. It's essentially based on the Lev Ari and the Or Yecheskel, Reb Cheskel Levenstein. It says like this. Who are these people that have such an approach? Who are these people? So he wants to know, this chapter maybe is not even shaykh to us. Why are we even learning it? Maybe this chapter is only for a few people who have this extreme attitude of holding back from serving until Hashem, until all their needs of themselves and their children and sometimes their grandchildren are taken care of. It seems like it's really got nothing to do with me that much. Mazeh kashu alai. I'm out there keeping Torah, doing mitzvahs, learning Torah, whatever. I don't know. You know, I have a job, I have a panosa, whatever, but I'm not holding Hashem again against Hashem's head that either you do what I want or I'm not sure. I mean, so my kesha to me. Why is this a fun? When the Chovas Lovos wrote the Sefer, he wrote the Sefer for everybody, not just for a few Meshuganas that need a bit of tochocha. So he brings down the Mephoshim said that the Klalim presented in this chapter apply to everybody. They're relevant to all of us. How? Was it kosher to me? So we've learned many times in the Sefer that a Kosh Baruch guarantees to provide a person with the basic needs, whatever he needs in order to live. Basic needs, whatever basic needs are. But Pashtus, whatever you need in order to live. Yeah, in order to live, you need a roof over your head. You need food. You need water. You need the godim. You need basic things. So Hashem guarantees the one who gives life will give sustenance. We spoke about that many times. Yeah, he brings that down. Now that sustenance may not be in advance, but when you need it, you'll have it. As it says in the passing of Tehillim, "Einei kol alecha yisabei ruvatano sen limit ochlam beitoy." The eyes of all of everybody looks to you, Hashem, with hope, and you give them their food in its proper time. It means Hashem's going to give you what you need, but He may not give it to you in advance. He's not going to give you enough food for 3 years because He'll never hear from you again. He makes you come every day. You come when you need it, you'll have it. That's all he promises. He doesn't promise he'll give you for 20 years in advance. When you need it, you'll get it. Therefore, somebody has absolute betochen. Once again, we don't have absolute betochen, but somebody who has betochen He is not worried about what he'll eat tomorrow. He's not worried about what he'll eat tomorrow because he knows that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will provide him what he needs each day as he needs it, as the day arrives. When I need it, I'll have it. I don't need it today because I don't need tomorrow's food today because when I need food tomorrow, he'll give me food tomorrow. That's how Baal Tochen lives. Yeah, that's how the Briskerov lived. Chazanish lived like that. That's how those great people lived. The Baal HaLeshem lived. The Baal HaLeshem, he didn't even have that. But he whatever. Rav Aryeh Levin brought the Leshem Chalas for Shabbos. He had Chalas for Shabbos. He didn't. There was no, he lived purely knowing what it was. That was the Briskerov as well. Completely, whatever I need today, you don't keep for tomorrow because whatever you need for tomorrow, you'll have tomorrow. Who says you'll be out tomorrow even? Fine. So that's a Baal Batochen. However, most people don't live on that level of Batochen. I assume none of us in this Chabura have reached that level of Batochen. If you have, let me know because I want to meet the Baal Batochen of that stature. And also want to know why he's sitting here wasting his time listening to us when he could be giving the shir. So I assume none of us, we all apprentices. We're all working towards that, and that's a Gewaldika thing, but we haven't reached that supreme level of just saying, listen, I don't know what I'm going to eat tomorrow. I haven't got a clue what's tomorrow. Baruch Hashem, I had what to eat today. I just finished supper. Tomorrow morning when I wake up, I don't know, there's nothing in the fridge. The house is empty, but tomorrow, whatever, there'll be something to eat tomorrow. And if not, then there won't. People say, no more. I don't know anybody walking around like that today. I don't know. I'm sure there are people like that. Well, that's not us. So where do we fit in? So it's a kitruk against us. We also bale mashkantas. What's going on here? We do worry about some of our needs in advance. Each one year, each person, there are certain areas where we will have betochen, we're less worried about tomorrow. In other areas, we're more worried about tomorrow. Each person, depending on who he is, what he is, whatever. One person sitting here worrying about how's he going to marry with his children. Another person's worrying about what he'll eat tomorrow. Another person's worrying about his medical. Everybody's got what to worry about for tomorrow, which, as we've seen, is a bit of a problem. So we at least want some short-term financial security. I don't need enough money in order for my children and grandchildren to live happily ever after. I know myself, no, kukach, bo'eli, that I have enough money, that I have to have enough money now that I know that in 10 years' time I've got enough to live on. It's a bit unrealistic. I know it's just not even shaykh practical. And second of all, I don't need that. But I do need to know that I have, you know, I'm not going to tell you how much, but at least I need to know that I'm covered for a certain amount of time in the future. I should call it short-term financial security. So many of us do put our energy into our businesses, and then when it's stabilized and things are, you know, hey, Raj, I need enough for a week, I need enough for a month, whatever it is that I need. So then I put my koichas into davening and learning and doing everything I'm supposed to be doing. So in a certain sense, we're also asking Hashem for a mashke. We're asking for a much smaller mashke. We're not asking him to have enough money that my children and grandchildren, you know, at Sofa Doris will have enough, whatever, and I have to make sure that I'm invested in and my whole life is there. I don't have time for anything. Baruch Hashem, we guys that are learning half a day at least, a couple of hours a week, something. We're not people that are waiting to get, but in certain areas we are. None of us are ready to just say, that's it. I've got enough to eat for today. I'm off to the best midrash. There were people that lived like that. They would open the store. The minute they had enough to live on, closed the store and went to learn. There were yidden that lived. The yidden that lived in Yerushalayim that like that, like Hillel. He would have enough exactly to go to the best midrash and whatever, then he would go. But we're not like that. We know that in a month's time, I have to pay rent. The chashmal's coming in 2 weeks' time. You know, there's kids' school fees every month. You tell me about now, today, I've got enough to live today. I'm not worried about me tomorrow. Yeah, but tomorrow, there's 5,000 shekels going out of account. How are you going to pay for that? So I'm going to make a ishtadlus today to make sure that I have that money. Now, I know it's from Hashem, and I know that it's all going to be fine, yeah, because I have a bit of betochen, but I'm still also, with my betochen, I'm also shtickle asking Hashem for a mashkanta. So we have to see why that's such a terrible thing, because I don't feel like I'm, you know, I'm doing the best I can. But you're right. There's certain parts of the day that I don't dedicate myself with full intensity to serving Hashem because I've got to take care of whatever it'll be at the end of the month. So just I'll quote him. He says, in a certain sense, even these people are asking Hashem for a security deposit, asking for a mishkanta, since they recognize the need to devote themselves more intensely to his service, yet they postpone that high level of service until they attain some degree of financial security. Somebody came to me the other day from the Kotel. They said to me, I'm just waiting until I can make just a little bit this and this and doing this and this and this, then I'm going to learn full time. So this is an Elah Yid who's learning half day and he's working and he's making, if you would go ask a Shalash, should he stop making shtadlis? I don't have a problem with him to stop making shtadlis. He's in the shoot. He's doing what he's supposed to be doing. But in a certain sense, there's a nidnud, there's a little seed planted there of he's also wanting, he's wanting, when this and this and this happens, then I'll do what you want, Hashem. On a certain degree, that's there. So the Chovas Halavos, he's speaking explicitly to those people who want a long-term security from Hashem. He's talking about the people, same way as we're talking about a Baal Batochen who's 100% Baal Batochen. Yeah, he's talking about 100% wants a Mashkin. He wants 300 years in the bank before he'll even get out of bed in the morning. For Hashem, he'll get out of bed to make money, but he ain't not going to do anything for Hashem until he's got at least 100 years taken care of. Yeah, in case he lives to be 160, he wants to make sure that everything's covered. So that's the extreme case. But the arguments and what the riots, the seven categories, are going to bring down also have relevance to us who are wanting a mashkin on a shorter term because we're working on betochen, so we recognize. So helping understanding these arguments to the extreme guy, but if we understand the arguments and we internalize some of them, it will help us to mechazak our betochen. So this chapter is a fundamentally integral part of a person's climbing up the ladder of betochen, becoming more and more expert in betochen. These seven categories that he's going to discuss in order to take apart this Baal Mashkin is very relevant to us. It's not just, oh, well, I'm not a Baal Mashkin, so we'll skip, we'll go straight to Perek Zayin. This is not talking about us. We know that, you know, no, we'll see. If you're honest, you'll see that we all have a need, and it could be a valid need. I'm not saying that what we have is something that needs to be uprooted in one day and destroyed. And no, there's a certain hishtadlis a person's involved in, and because we're involved in hishtadlis, we get very confused about what's hishtadlis and what's actually coming from Hashem and what I'm doing and what I'm not. That whole tumult with hishtadlis and betochen we've spoken about many, many times. So the middle of my seeking some kind of ishtadlis, I'm going to be slipping in this area a little bit, and we need to be aware of it. We need to work on it as we climb this ladder of betochen. So that's why just very important to have this background when you're going into a chapter that seems to be really not so relevant to me, because you're going to have a good laugh. The things that this Baal Mashkin thinks and wants, the Chavis of is going to take him apart terribly. You think, no, of course you to me. I'm already out of that. That's not me. We'll see. We all have. And that's because we're not Baal Betochen. Kolzman, I'm not a Baal Betochen. I don't have total Menuchas and Nefesh and Yeshuva Das. I do have what to worry about still. I'm going to be slipping into this trap here. So it's important to learn it, to recognize it, and to take these arguments to heart so that we have more tools in order to build our Betochen. Okay, that's the Agdama to the Agdama. Let's see what he says. Va'arishon. Me'apne Tshuva Alav. The first of the seven ways that we'll explain to this person, explain to ourselves. Shenemolo, you say to him, Ata ish amistapek begzeres aboyre. You who have doubts about a Kodesh Baruch Hu's decree, meaning you have doubts about whether a Kodesh Baruch Hu is the sole source of whatever happens in the world. You have doubts. And you also don't believe, you don't have proper imuna in how big and our Kodesh Baruch Hu is all powerful, all everything. Yeah, you're not we mentioned him earlier, the Baal Makolet, who doesn't trust the buyer that he'll pay his account, so he takes a mashkin. So you too don't believe that a Kodesh Baruch Hu is all powerful. and he can do whatever he wants. The light of your seichel has gone dark, and the candle of your intellect, of your intelligence, seichel, don't exactly know what these words mean, has been extinguished. The going of faith is taivas alone, since you're overpowered by the darkness of your taivas. Very poetic, but it's a stark illusion. This person who doesn't have full imuna that Akash Baruch Hu is kol yachol. So it's like your seichels, you switched off your brain. You're working without any seichel. The seichel and the bina, those are the two words. The light of that's been completely extinguished by you. You mamish, get your brain dead. That's quite a stark illusion. Why? Because you're overwhelmed by the choshech of your taivas, by the afela. Afela doesn't really mean darkness. Afela is more like the fog, like a thick fog of your taivas. The only time where you can take a mashkin is when the person, somebody who's coming to you and wants credit from you or whatever, is a friend. He's a friend, he's an associate, he's a business, whatever. See, he's got no authority over you. Somebody comes to the makolet, you have a makolet. Somebody comes to bar from you. They want credit. You tell them, listen, I don't know who you are. I don't know if you'll pay me. You leave me your watch and I'll, to the value of what you own. When you pay me back, I'll give you back your watch. I want a mashkin. So that's appropriate. And also, this guy's got no authority over you. It's not like somebody who owns your store and you have to pay him rent. If the owner of the store who you're paying rent to comes and says to you, I want a packet of milk and I'll pay you tomorrow, you don't ask him for a mashkin because you owe him more than he's got authority over you. He can kick you out the shop tomorrow if you want. So what's that? But so you ask a mashkin not from somebody like that. You ask a mashkin from somebody who no. And his orders don't obligate you in anything. This person who comes to buy from your store and you're asking for a mashkin, so he can tell you, please, I want you to stand outside. You tell him, I want to stand outside. He can't tell you what to do. He's got no shlita over you. You don't know him any COVID. You don't even respect. You don't know anything. You're providing him with goods and he has to pay you. But when a daily worker, hires himself out by other people hire him out to do work. Ain't tov lemashkin, seichre b'schore kaidem avadoisai. Does he ask the boss that he's working for to give him a mashkin to make sure that he'll get paid his salary? I'm happy to work for you. Ever heard of this? A guy gets a job at the bank. He goes for interview, whatever. They tell him, fine, you start tomorrow morning. We pay you $1,000 a month. At the end of the month, you get paid. He says, well, how do I know you're going to pay me? Yeah, I'm only going to start working if you make mashkin. I'll tell him, fine, go find a job somewhere else. Maybe want a mashkin from the guy that you work for. Love it, kacha. Because okay, however, shlo yu mashkin adoinov kaidem avadoisai lo b'panosa. And Eved by his master, he's gonna demand a mashkin for his sustenance from his master before he does any work for him. And you're an Eved. You're an Eved. How can you? If you work for a company, you can't ask them for a mashkin. That's for sure. You maybe think ulai, an Eved can't ask his master for. I'll chop down trees. I'll do your work for you. You have to give me a mashkin. How do I know you'll pay me? I don't have to pay you. You're an Eved. I don't have to do anything for you. I don't owe you anything. And I have full authority over you. As how much more so, something that's created, a human being that was created by Kodesh Baruch Hu, can't ask for a mashkin from the Kodesh Baruch Hu before he serves him. Even after you've served him, you can't ask for a mashkin. But certainly not before. Hashem has the most unbelievable tfiyah on a human being. He owns us. Not just owns us because we're possessions of his. If we would stop thinking about you for 1 second, you'd cease to exist. Now you want a mashkin from him because you don't trust him that he'll pay you, but you trust him that he'll keep thinking about you and he'll keep you alive? I mean, it's ridiculous if you think about it. It's absolutely pathetic. If, I don't know, the richest man in the world, whoever it is, he comes into your makolet and he buys a packet of milk and he says, "Oi, I left my wallet at home. I'll send somebody in to give you the money tomorrow. You're asking for a mashkin?" No, because you know the guy, he'll pay you. What's the problem? So Kosh Bochu's got everything to pay, but more than that, he owns you. Means the story of the worker, the hired worker, and whatever, that's just a build-up. We're going up in degrees and degrees. He could have started just straight away with the Eved. But he goes up in degrees. Even the lightest relationship obligates you not to ask for a mashkin. So how much more so about Kodesh Baruch Hu? Umina Tema. He says it's absolutely astounding. If the Eved would demand from his master some kind of security that he'll make sure that he gets paid, it's disgraceful. He doesn't have to ever pay the servant. He bought him. I paid for you. You're an Eved. However, you might not like the story of slaves, but we talk about in a case of a slave. How can you ask for a mashkin? He owns you. He's paid for you already. He doesn't owe you anything. Kamoshim alti kavodim hamashamshim esarav almanas lekabel pras. The Mishnah Pekahavos already tells us, don't be like the avodim who serve their master because they want to get something from him. They want to get a reward. They want some prize. That's why they do it. Kol shekain she yoyis ponav levakesh mashkin meleponosa kaidim avodaisa. How much more so? It's embarrassing. It's disgusting. You ask the master for payment before you do the work. There's a chutzpah that Hashem kamol. V'daim elazeh amar kosuv halo tigmelu zois im novel v'lo chochem. Is this how you pay Hashem? I don't know what the word is. Novel, despicable. I don't know, whatever. And lacking in wisdom, people. That's how you repay Hashem for everything He's done for you. He's your master. He's your father. He created you. He formed you. Because He created you and formed you, so He's your master. And therefore, you have to be submissive. Can't make demands from Him. We know that the only reason we daven is because you have a chiv to daven, but to get up in Hashem and read that whole list of requests we do every day, and we're asking for this, we're asking for that, we're asking for that, because you have a chiv to do it. That's what Hashem set up the world. It's an unbelievable chesed He gives us, that we can go to Him and ask Him for our needs. But we don't say, if you don't pay me, if you don't give me what I'm asking for, I'm not working today. Talking about. So that's the first refutation, the first taina, the first tfeah against the Bala Mashkin. We've seen we all have little molecular connections to the Bala Mashkin. We have also some of that aspect. And you realize how stupid it is. It's absolutely ridiculous. We have Chivim to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We have a Shulchan Aruch that machaves us to do certain things. By the way, one of those things in the Shulchan Aruch that you have a Chiv to do is to go to work, is to make a panos in a chinami. But there's all other things. We have to juggle 613 mitzvahs and make a panasa and take care of everything. It's a bit overwhelming in Achinami. But to go to Kodesh Baruch and say, listen, just put your Shulchan Aruch aside for 1 minute. We'll get to Shulchan Aruch and keeping all the mitzvahs and doing everything you've machab me to do. But first of all, you have to pay. You have to put something on the table. You want me to work for you? You have to come to the party first. We just learned that the most ridiculous thing that a person could do. Completely off the charts. So we have to go and have a look over the next week, and that's Hashem, go do a little work and see how much of this is relevant to us. Once again, not talking about the time that a person has set aside in consultation with the Rabbonim. You know, this is the status he needs to be making, he needs to go to work. We saw that in the 9:30 Shia this morning. That's Kula Mitzvah. It's Kula Mitzvah. Everything he's doing for his Parnasa and he's doing, especially for if he has a wife, is a mitzvah deraisa for sure, not even a question. Where's the problem? The problem is where I'm not prepared to do a certain mitzvah or fulfill a certain obligation because I don't feel that I have enough yet on the table. That's where the problem happens. It's not so easy to find. It's a bit, ma'od adin. Think about it. Maybe we'll share with each other next week what we discovered over the week in this area. Yeah. But this is where the work in betochen really starts. Okay.
Thank you.
Mitz Hashem, we'll be together next week. Bezrat Hashem.
Yitzhak Hashem. Shkoyach.
Have a good night.
Night.
Thank you very much.